Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
You know, Josh, it's a little bit hard to do a show when you say that you're ready, and yet you're trying to make me laugh all the way when we're about to be on the air.
Yeah, well, you need something to get over the debacle that was the Big Crapple over the week.
Oh, nice title name drop there, Josh.
Well, you might as well. I mean, what, 1-5 in the New York trip? It's pretty safe to say that the Baltimore Orioles are glad to be home. Yeah, we can actually say they are home for once and playing in front of their fans for the first time in what feels like eons.
About 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I would have to say probably Sunday before that fateful Monday in Baltimore.
Yeah, so your girlfriend did decide to go to that reopening day event.
That she did.
Yeah, that she did. And she didn't cook you a meal, from what I've heard.
I don't care about women cooking me meals or anything like that. I am an adult. I can fend for myself. I don't need people to cook for me.
Well, you did call me earlier and ask...
if you wanted something.
Yeah, if I wanted something.
Yeah, because I want to see if you ate, and I'm going to eat myself. I'd feel bad eating, and then you haven't ate yet.
It looked like you were implying blame on the significant other. Okay.
I was just trying to, like, you know, freshen up a little bit, and I don't believe in traditional gender roles in my relationship, Josh.
I'm just metaphorically throwing you under a bus there, but it's all good.
No big deal. She doesn't listen. So the Orioles,
wow,
the big crapple.
There.
Yeah, the Orioles, the big crapple. And then we've got Tom Brady suspended.
Yep, 4 games. I believe there was also a first-round pick in 2016, fourth-round pick in 2017.
Say it ain't so, Tom. It ain't so.
Aren't we a little bit past the say it ain't so period with the New England Patriots by now?
I think we were past that post-Spygate.
Hell,
post-Tuck rule.
Oh, hell, post-Tuck rule. And there's another update. Oh, yeah, they just got rid of another draft pick. Sure, why not? Yeah,
and then breaking news, the New England Patriots had to change their logo.
The growing nose there, I did see.
Well, they also had the camera, the Pat, like, doing the camera spy thing. But then, okay, so Tom Brady's been suspended. Ed Reed has retired this past week. That was pretty significant news.
It was some positive news for Baltimore sports for a change, considering the events going on with the Baltimore Orioles on the road. But, yeah. Ed Reed retires with the team that drafted him in 2002, the Baltimore Ravens. So me and Ray are going to be looking back on Ed Reed's career and where me and Ray rank him amongst the best defensive players of the 2000s.
Oh, boy. You mean I got to compare him to John Lynch?
John Lynch. Who else was out there? Ray Lewis, part of the 2000s.
Rondé Barber, Derrick Brooks.
Yep, Derrick Brooks.
Would you consider Rod Woodson in that category?
Rod Woodson, he retired in 2004, right? I mean, guys that I guess sort of played from 2000 up to now, I guess you could say.
Maybe Derrick Brooks comes to mind. I would have said Warren Sapp, but ooh.
Ooh. Michael Strahan, you got to put up there too.
Hey, look, Favre laid down on that last sack, and we all know it.
You're using the Sapp argument right there. Ooh.
Are you comparing me to Warren Sapp?
No, I'm not. I'm not doing it. Why would I imply such a thing there, Ray? Jeez. And we are bringing back our traditional two-minute rants. Ray's two-minute rant, I know what he's going to be talking about. What are you going to be talking about?
Indian rain dance sports.
Yep. Mine is TBD, to be determined. So
I thought you said TVD. Like, is that like a...
TVD?
Is that an advanced version of the DVD?
No, I don't think we're that far advanced into the future yet.
Okay, well, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can catch us on always at sfmsports.net in Audio Boom, Stitcher, Spreaker, of course. That Facebook page, the Baltimore Sports Free for All podcast, Twitter at BSportsFree, the number 4 all. Your blog, the Sunday Night Sports Delight with Josh Hall, and it's the AL East Weekend Review. And that's pretty much it.
Yep, and reviewing week 5 of AL East action, where as we stand as far as the standings go as of this blog, the dreaded New York Yankees are in first place of the AL East. The Baltimore Orioles are tied for fourth. in the AL East, along, surprisingly, with the Boston Red Sox. Tampa Bay's in second, Toronto's in third. So, seems like it's upside down when you look at the standings. But then again, it's early May. Anything can happen.
Hey, it's topsy-turvy day.
It's topsy-turvy.
No, it's topsy-turvy May.
Yep, topsy-turvy May.
I just recently watched The Hunchback of Notre Dame, so that's why I decided to say that.
Oh, really? You just went to watch that and, I guess, to get away from the dreaded Big Crapple series?
I wouldn't say it was a withdrawal from the Big Crapple series. It just happened to be on, and I watched it.
Well, looking at the weekend that the week that I deemed the Big Crapple, the Baltimore Orioles, after a solid homestand against the Tampa Bay Rays, if we could call it a homestand there.
The home away from home.
Yep. They go up to New York. They have two games against the Mets, four games against the Yankees, and you thought to yourself, okay, worst case scenario, they go 2-4, just come back home. One game under 500, it won't be so bad. Best case scenario, they go 3-3, 4-2, and it's like, okay, good, we're back. All right, great, we're going to go back at home reopening day. No, not so much. Nope.
How about 1-5 in the Big Apple? Yowza.
Just ran into some solid pitching by both the Mets and the Yankees.
They got swept by the Mets.
Is it safe to say, and I feel like I haven't seen an Orioles win over a Mets team in a while.
I don't know. It's just that they got swept by the Mets. I never thought I'd ever read that sentence or say that sentence, but apparently I did. It was a two-game series, granted. A two-game series, but still, you got swept by the Mets.
Well, the Mets are a good team this year, Ray. I mean, as of now, they are a good team.
Historically, haven't been a good team.
Well, not in the past several seasons, especially with injuries to David Wright, Jose Reyes, who was their starting pitcher, Matt Harvey. Yeah, so it's... It hasn't been a nice couple of years for the Mets, but the fans are actually enjoying a 20-11 season, first place in the NL East for a change. But they should keep an eye on those Washington Nationals, who have decided under the lethal bat of Bryce Harper, who's looked like the hammer of Thor over the last couple of games. The Nationals are climbing up the rankings now. So
yeah, I wouldn't say climbing up the rankings. They've kind of been up there for a while, Josh.
Yeah, well, their starting pitching has been on the downslope this year, but it's picked back up. But
yeah, as they go on the downslope, they're still better than, oh, I don't know, Bud Norris. They're still better than, oh, I don't know, Chris Tillman.
Yeah.
Brad Brock, Tommy Hunter.
So we definitely will be looking at that right there. So... On the Tuesday game on May the 5th, the Baltimore Orioles went and visited the New York Mets and unfortunately just could not muster enough runs in a pitching matchup, a pitching duel, where Bartolo Colon just dealed against the Orioles' offense. 7 2/3 innings, one earned run, six hits, nine strikeouts, no walks, and the New York Mets won that game 3-2. Bartolo Colon was the winner, 5-1. Bud Norris fell to 1-3. The only offense we saw was basically a Manny Machado home run in the eighth inning off of Bartolo Colon, his fifth of the year, and Chris Davis hitting his sixth home run of the year in the ninth inning. So not a whole lot of offense, not a lot to write home about for the Orioles in that game.
No, it wasn't a lot to write home about, except for the fact that you got to look at a little bit of positive sides with Bud Norris and the fact that he did go a decent start with that Mets series on Tuesday. And
seven innings pitched, three earned runs off seven hits, and four strikeouts and one walk. So it wasn't that he pitched bad. It's just the other guy was better.
Yeah, that was actually his best performance of the entire young season so far. And with Bud Norris to be able to pick it up, I mean, you look at the rotation of the Baltimore Orioles and you think to yourself, okay, it would probably be Gonzalez and Jimenez would be your weak links, but no, Gonzalez and Jimenez have been some of your best pitchers of the in that rotation, along with Wei and Chen. The two guys that are giving it up are Chris Tillman and Bud Norris, and that's quite surprising, Josh, and that's one of the main reasons why the Orioles are where they're at right now, in addition to the fact that, you know, their bullpen, I just mentioned Tommy Hunter, Brad Brock, Kevin Gausman. I mean, these guys, they haven't been performing at the level that they need to be. Darren O'Day and Zach Britton are your only bright spots in the bullpen, and even Darren O'Day has been giving up runs in key situations, but at the same time, he still has his ERA below one, and Britton's only blown one save in about 12 appearances. So with that, I mean, you have two guys in the bullpen that are performing well. Other than that, everybody else is like, stinker.
Yeah, even Brian Mattis, who has a 2.92 ERA as of this podcast, has struggled here and there in several outings. Looking at the Wednesday game, May 6th, the Baltimore Orioles facing off against the Mets once again in a light two-game series. You could say that pitching was the lone bright spot in the 3-2 Tuesday loss, but pitching nor offense were any of the bright spots in the 5-1 loss to the Mets. Jacob DeGrom was the winner, 3-3. Ubaldo Jimenez drops to 2-2 as the loser of that game.
Jacob DeGrom sounds like a pitcher that the Orioles would have had in those 14-year dark period.
DeGrom, 7 innings, 1 earned run off 6 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. So yeah, Orioles once again fell victim offensively to the strikeouts.
They fell victim to they got DeGrom'd.
Yeah,
He sounds exactly like a pitcher that the Orioles would have had in 2002.
Or 2003, right around there, with Travis Driscoll and Rodrigo Lopez.
Or I'm thinking of
Calvin Maduro.
Because of DeGrom, I was thinking Eric DeBose.
Eric DeBose? I forgot all about him. Yeah, Eric DeBose.
I actually was at his first start. First start for the Orioles. And I'm looking at this guy. He pitched 7 shutout innings in his first start. And everyone was like, oh, wow, look at this guy. All of a sudden, he looks like a nice prospect. And
Reality set in.
He burnt out. Reality set in hard, like with Rodrigo Lopez. What, Rodrigo Lopez started out, 6-0?
Yeah, or 5-0. Same with Travis Driscoll. Travis Driscoll was 5-0, too.
They started out 5-0 in their rookie seasons, then all of a sudden...
harsh reality kicked in.
Yeah, I think with Rodrigo Lopez, because he lost the Rookie of the Year to Toronto Blue Jay, maybe that kind of soured him a little bit to the point where he just couldn't take it and just wanted to be like, that Rookie of the Year trophy was mine.
So Jimenez pitched 4 innings, threw 85 pitches in those 4 innings, gave up 3 earned runs off 6 hits, 2 walks, 1 strikeout, gave up a home run. His ERA, still a healthy 2.36, but...
hey, he's allowed to have one bad start, okay?
But it's just a disappointing outing right there by a starting pitcher who... you would hope that even if he went 5 innings, okay, that saves your bullpen an inning or so, but that certainly doesn't help the bullpen's cause. And we saw that with Brad Brock later with the 2 innings he pitched, giving up 2 earned runs off 1 hit. And, inflating his ERA up near the 5s almost. So if you're a long reliever coming in to help the cause there, especially the way the Mets were hitting in that game, you had Granderson and Herrera hitting home runs for the Mets. It just didn't pan out there. Kevin Gausman was the lone bright spot, along with Jason Garcia. We won't be saying that a lot too often with the way he's been pitching this year.
No.
But Gausman and Garcia pitched well for the Orioles in the 1 innings that they've each had. So, yeah, other than that, all you can say offensively for the Orioles, anybody that pulled their weight, was Jimmy Paredes, who went 1-for-5 with an RBI. And even that isn't enough performance right there to say, well, at least we got a run in.
If you have to say at least or something like that, that means that you're trying to find a silver lining where silver lining just isn't right. It just isn't there. The Orioles in the last... in the last 3 weeks, 2 weeks have not been very good for them. And the big crapple was just one of those weeks, in addition to what was going on even prior to that Boston series and the White Sox series that was short-lived, as Joe Angel would say. But at the same time, though, it's May. The Orioles just got J.J. Hardy back this past week. So that's a bright spot. The guy's got to get some at-bats going in and needs to be able to find his hitting form, be one of the better hitting shortstops in the league like he usually is. Matt Wieters, 3 weeks away. Hopefully 3 weeks away.
And hopefully Jonathan Scope about 6-7 weeks away from coming back.
And Ryan Flaherty as well. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm looking forward to the return of Ryan Flaherty.
Best utility man in baseball.
I mean, I think he's the glue that holds this lineup together. Because without him, it just seems like Buck has no answers. It's like, I've lost my guy.
Even though most fans don't want to say that out loud.
They don't want to say that out loud, but Ryan Flaherty is Mr. October for the Orioles. Him and Delman Young. And Delman Young, I will say this. You can knock on his power numbers all you want to at the start of the season. Yeah, he's got 0 home runs. I mean, chicks dig the long ball, so what? Nelson Cruz is having an historic season in Seattle, and guess what? They're 14-17 right now. So you can say all you want about the long ball, even have King Felix, but at the same time, though, it's a whole team unity that gets everything together. That's why the Orioles have been good since 2012 without that big, big, giant, sexy name other than Nelson Cruz that won last year.
Yep, and unfortunately, Nelson Cruz would have been needed in the Thursday game, May the 7th, against the New York Yankees, the first game of the 4-game series. Yankees winning that game, a close one, 4-3.
Yeah, the Orioles' record in one-run games this so far in the
season. Seems lopsided compared to 2 years ago, three years ago.
I mean, yeah, it's to the point where they're the opposite of what they were, and they are now losing in one-run games. They're losing those clutch moments, whether it be Darren O'Day, like I said, giving up a few clutch moments right there. Chris Davis striking out, like, when it's key that you need him to hit. It seems like whenever he gets a home run, it's early on in the game. And it's like maybe a solo or a two-run home run at the end of the day doesn't make a little bit of a difference in the game. And then you have it to where Delmon Young is at least hitting doubles, but he's just not bringing anybody in because of where he's hitting in the lineup. It's just never seems to have anybody on base for him.
So Orioles lose 4-3 to the New York Yankees. Nathan Eovaldi was your winner, improved to 3-0. Chris Tillman, the loser, 2-4. Tillman's performance went 5 2/3 innings pitch, which seems like a relief compared to the Jimenez start in their previous game against the Mets. Unfortunately, gave up 4 earned runs off of 10 hits. 10 hits allowed in 5 2/3 innings for Chris Tillman.
Tillman.
And 3 walks and 3 strikeouts, so that location isn't there.
Yeah, you've got 4 losses so far. Your command and your location are way off, and if you don't watch it, you're on pace to lose 20 games. You're on pace to be Mike Moroth, and that's not a good name to live up to there, Chris Tillman.
Yep, but fortunately for Tillman, he did have some backup by the bullpen. Tommy Hunter went 1 1/3 scoreless innings, along with Brian Mattis, who also went 1 scoreless inning as well. Offensively for the Orioles, one of the bright spots in that game, Jimmy Paredes went 1 for 2.
He's always the bright spot.
2 walks, hitting his 4th home run of the year, also driving his 12th RBI of the season. Caleb Joseph went 2 for 4, hitting his 3rd home run of the season and driving in 2 RBIs, number 8 and number 9 on the season.
Hey, maybe bring Wieters back as a DH.
Or maybe have him play every 2 days, so that way you have 2 days of Joseph, 2 days of Wieters.
Or get him to play first base.
Give him proper rest there. And an ugly milestone, I guess you can add to this, Rodrigo Lopez hitting his 661st home run, passing Willie Mays for 4th all-time.
Did you say Rodrigo Lopez?
Did I say Rodrigo Lopez?
Alex Rodriguez?
I wish it was Rodrigo Lopez.
Wow.
Wow.
That's talk about
Samsonite. That was way off. Alex Rodriguez.
Rodrigo Lopez. I know I mentioned him earlier. Where do you even get that from?
Oh, man. I'm sorry, folks. Alex, you know what? He deserves to have his name butchered considering what he's done to baseball. Alex Rodriguez hit his 661st career home run, passing Willie Mays for 4th on the all-time home run
Yet
list.
A lot of people with sabermetric stats will say that Willie Mays is still the better player.
Still the better
player.
Like I
said, you can dig the long ball all you want to. Alex Rodriguez, how many World Series do you have?
One. Yeah, just one. And even that seems a little tainted.
Yeah, and considering the fact that the Yankees have bought their way to playoff appearances every year and seem to only have cashed out with one World Series win.
You know what stat is as ugly as Alex Rodriguez's 661st home run, I guess, in the Orioles' case? Andrew Miller collecting his 12th save of the season. His ERA still standing at a solid 0.00.
Yeah, that's Andrew Miller for you. That's the
He's
one.
He's going to the Yankees.
That's the one pickup that I would really wish the Orioles did retain in the offseason. I mean, if you had to move Britton as a setup man or even get rid of Britton, I mean, by all means, Andrew Miller.
Don't get rid of Britton.
I wouldn't say that. I'm just saying if you had to move down Britton and he wasn't going to have it, get rid of the guy and keep Andrew Miller. I mean, that's the one thing that I would like to say. That is the one thing that I will give the credit to, though, he's going to the Yankee crowd and the Indian Rain Dance sports fan that I'm going to be ranting on later on in this podcast. But yes, Andrew Miller was the one guy that I wanted to see the Orioles pick up. But at the same time, as I've mentioned earlier in these podcasts throughout the season, is the fact that it is not just the fact that they lost Andrew Miller is the reason why this bullpen is struggling. It's because Andrew Miller was just one guy, Josh, and it's only been 2 guys in the Orioles bullpen that's been picking it up. Meanwhile, Tommy Hunter's been home run hunter. He's back. Jason Garcia, ew. Brian Mattis says
can only pitch against lefties.
Yeah, Brian Mattis can only pitch against lefties. And then you've got, T.J. McFarland's, had a
just
deep,
one
deep,
just
outing.
One inning.
He had a decent. He finally had a decent outing.
Yeah,
and then,
just one outing there.
Let me see, Gosman. I mean,
Gosman's picking it up.
But then Brad Brock as well. Wes Wright.
Usually when you have those ugly games at the beginning of the year, they haunt you until you pick up about 8 scoreless outings, and then you're back to respectability there.
And maybe put Norris in the bullpen and make Gosman the starter.
Right, who knows? That could happen. And moving on to the May 8th game on Friday, it was another heartbreaker for the Orioles. Yankees went in at 5-4. Your winner was Dellin Betances, who improves to 4-0.
What the hell is up with these names?
Your loser, Miguel Gonzalez, drops to 3-2. Andrew Miller picking up his 13th save of the season. Miguel Gonzalez had 4 innings, 5 earned runs off 5 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, giving up 1 home run. His ERA inflated up to 3.57. So Miguel Gonzalez didn't necessarily have an outing that helped the Baltimore Orioles, but fortunately he did get some solid bullpen help. TJ McFarland had 3 innings pitched, had 3 strikeouts and 1 walk. Darren O'Day and Zach Britton finished the remainder of the last inning. O'Day getting 1/3 of an out and Britton getting 2/3 of the outs in that inning. So the bullpen certainly helped where Gonzalez suffered.
But with the way Gonzalez and, you know, I said Jimenez have been pitching this season, they're allowed to have 1 or 2 bad starts here and there.
But that's it.
But where are the other guys?
Where are the other guys? Yeah,
that's the problem. When those guys have the bad starts, the other guys are having bad starts as well, and the Orioles get into a little bit of a snide here in addition to the big crapple, and that's the formula it is for the big crapple.
Yep. Manny Machado was solid offensively, going 3-for-4, driving in his 14th RBI of the season, also drawing a walk. Jimmy Paredes went 1-for-5, driving in 2 RBIs, number 13 and 14 on the year. J.J. Hardy went 1-for-3 in his second game of the season. We forgot to mention his previous game back, but he went 0-for-4. It wouldn't have been anything to write home about. And that pretty much summed it up there as far as the Orioles' offense goes. Not necessarily strikeout-heavy as they were in the past several games, but still didn't help the cause there. Still just wasn't enough against the New York Yankees. And you hope towards Saturday and Sunday it would have picked up for the Baltimore Orioles in terms of, I don't know, collecting a win. So we move on to the Saturday, May 9th game. The Orioles winning that game 6-2. It was a game that caught me by surprise, I guess, television-wise, because that was a pretty early Saturday game. I'm not used to 1 o'clock Saturday games there, Ray.
So, no, I'm not used to 1 o'clock Saturday games myself. I was actually playing Mortal Kombat X in an establishment in Ellicott City, and then all of a sudden I'm looking up, and I see, oh, there's the Oriole game on. That's no problem. And then my buddy goes up to me and says, you know, this is a replay, right? I'm like, well, it didn't say replay on the top right-hand corner of the screen, so for all intents and purposes, I thought it was actually a live game. He's like, no, it was a replay. I'm like, shoot, darn it. How dare it happen? I mean, I'm thinking about cutting cable here soon, Josh, just being a cord cutter. You know, the cord cutters, as they always like try to maintain. That's why Comcast and Time Warner want to merge. That's why they want to fight net neutrality, because they know that us cord cutters, we're starting to grow.
We're growing in bunches.
But the one problem with being a cord cutter is all the Orioles games are on cable.
Well, the Orioles won 6-2 on Saturday, May the 9th. Wei-Yan Chen picking up his first win of the season, improves to 1-1. Pitched 7 innings, giving up 1 earned run off of 5 hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. His ERA lowered to 2.52. It's nice to see Wei-Yan Chen finally picking up the win there for the Orioles after several disappointing starts there. Chase Whiteley was the loser, 1-1. Zach Britton collecting his 6th save of the year. But let's talk about Chen here real quick. Just looking at his last several outings here. This outing, he had 7 innings, given up 1 earned run off 5 hits, 7 strikeouts. And previous game had 6 innings, 2 earned runs. The game before that, 8 innings, 2 earned runs. So the last 3 starts for Wei-Yan Chen, all the Orioles games they've won under Chen in the last 3 games, including this one. But considering his line, considering his stat line the last several games, it's safe to say he could have won all 3 of his past 3 starts, but it is nice to see that win back on the stat sheet for Chen.
Yeah, it is, considering the fact that wins were kind of his strong point last year. And now you have it to where their pitching has been struggling, but Wei-Yan Chen has been one of your bright spots, along with Jimenez, along with Gonzalez. Like I said, those guys are allowed. They are allowed to have a bad start here and there. But Tillman, Norris,
where are you?
Yeah, we're going to get to Norris shortly, unfortunately. I used to joke that Bud Norris was your boy, but I guess in this case, he's lost the your boy status right now as far
he's
as...
He's never been my boy.
Well, there you go. See? It's already working there, folks.
No, he's never been my boy. I just said he was a surprise all-star last year, and he put up the numbers that were capable of being a surprise all-star.
Yeah, but when we were bringing up his wins last season, you gleamed like you were the proud dad of a fantasy player.
Only because you laughed in my face.
I know, and I told you I'm sorry. I told you I was sorry. But, yeah, looking at the Saturday game, because it was the only win the Orioles had this week, offensively, Jimmy Paredes, just outstanding offensively, 3-for-5, scoring 2 runs, scoring 1 RBI, hit his 5th home run of the season, also hit a triple, his 2nd triple of the season there, and... You brought up Nelson Cruz going to the Seattle Mariners, and in no way, folks, don't get this twisted, in no way am I comparing Jimmy Paredes to Nelson Cruz. Paredes is several years younger than Cruz. He still has a lot to prove in the majors, but it is safe to say that where Nelson vacated his designated hitter's role, Jimmy Paredes has certainly stepped up and then some.
That he has, along with... key select other guys. Hitting is not the reason why the Orioles are losing, and that's just the bottom line about it. The
Delman Young, by the way, since you were bringing up key select guys, 2-for-4, 2 RBIs in that game.
Yeah. I mean, I like Delman. Delman Young is seriously going through a push here for the Baltimore Orioles. Ever since that that 3-run double that he had in the playoffs last year, Delman Young has been, you know, most loved Orioles since then and continues to live up that reputation despite the fact that his home run numbers are down. I mean, what can I say more about the guy? And he's playing statistically better than Nick Markakis in right field.
Yeah, and Nick Markakis, by the way, the same amount of home runs as Delman Young. Bloop, goose egg. But speaking of, well, it might as well have been a goose egg on Sunday, May the 10th, as the Orioles dropped 3 out of 4 to the Yankees in the series finale, Yankees winning 6-2. Michael Pineda, 5-0 was your winner. Bud Norris, 1-4, your loser. Pineda, 7 innings, 1 run off 6 hits, no walks, 16 strikeouts. I don't even want to look at the stat line for the Orioles offense because, okay, let's look at it this way. J.J. Hardy went 2-for-4, hit his first home run of the season. Adam Jones went 2-for-4, hit a double. Also scored an RBI. That's it. That was your offense right there. Other than that, looking down the stat line, 2 strikeouts for Machado, 1 strikeout for Paredes, 1 strikeout for Jones, 3 strikeouts for Delman Young, 2 strikeouts for Chris Davis, which is a shocker because it seems like he's had four.
He's improving.
It seems like he's had 4 every single game. J.J. Hardy didn't have any strikeouts, so there you go, J.J. You get your gold star. 2 strikeouts for Alejandro Deaza, 3 strikeouts for Caleb Joseph, 1 strikeout for Travis Snyder as your pinch hitter, and 3 strikeouts for Ryan Flaherty. So, yeah. Yeah, there you go. 18 strikeouts total for the Baltimore Orioles offense. And you could say what you want about pitching, starting pitching, but when your offense isn't getting productive outs, and what I mean by productive outs, like, look, let's look at Adam Jones here real quick, Ray. Adam Jones is having a stellar year. Might as well be on his way to another All-Star game.
But?
No. I'm not saying a but. I'm not saying a but at all. The difference in his game this year, and you've noticed this too, he's been having more productive at-bats than he's had in the past. You look at his strikeout numbers compared to last year, it seems like an anomaly. The fact that Adam Jones has struck out as less as he's had in previous seasons is showing to me that, I guess at the age of 30, or going to be at the age of 30, Adam Jones is improving on being a solid major league hitter in all aspects now, especially pitch selection. And looking at the rest of the Orioles hitting lineup, it just seems like maybe they caught Pineda on a very good day. Maybe Pineda is a guy that's going to be an all-star for the Yankees. I don't know. I'm not a mind reader. I'm not Nostradamus. But it just seems to me that these strikeout numbers are too damn high for the offense for
the
Baltimore
Orioles. Like the rent's too damn high?
Yes, for the Baltimore Orioles.
So the strikeouts are too damn high and the rent is too damn high for the Baltimore Orioles. Is the ceiling getting too high, though, for the Baltimore Orioles as they go deeper and deeper into the AL East here, and it's now mid-May. When do you start saying that it's no longer going to be a long season? It's just the beginning of the season. We still got plenty of time to go. Eventually, that time starts waning a little bit, and then the morale gets a little toxic in the locker room to the point where you're saying, just not our year. Do you think so?
I'll look at it this way. I mean, as of this podcast, they're only 5.5 back of the New York Yankees for first place. So it's not like they are, I can't even say the Houston Astros anymore of the ALS, because the Houston Astros has surprisingly been a good team. But let's say the Astros last year, where at this point I'm assuming they were 10.5, 11 games back. And it seems like that distance was just so far off from first place. I feel like the Orioles have potential to be that team that wins, dare I say, 13 or 14 of their next 20 games if they get on the right mojo, get on the right track. You know, they're going to have three home games. They're going to have a solid homestand this week. They're in a three-game series right now with the Toronto Blue Jays. They're off on the 14th, my birthday. On the 15th, the 16th, and 17th on the weekend, they are facing the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Just Los Angeles Angels, please.
Yeah, okay. So they're going to be looking into that. And hopefully, Ray, with these six games at home, you're hoping to at least go 4-2, get yourself back up, get the mojo going again, and just getting that high morale up, because as we go into the season, you're going to be facing against Seattle, the Marlins, the Houston Astros. You're going to have the White Sox again. You're going to start getting into the nitty-gritty of your schedule here, and you're going to have to start picking up the wins. Because
that you are.
If you don't pick up the wins, the morale's not there. And when the morale's not there, bye-bye season.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
I got to tell you something, Ray. I need to take back the last statement I said. Bye-bye season.
Why?
Well, because the season's not over yet. And also, we've promised our listeners, our loyal listeners of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, that we are going to be doing a monthly ticket giveaway for Orioles games. Right?
Right.
Okay.
But you're not really contradicting your last statement, considering the fact that it was rhetorical or hyperbole, a what-if, so to speak, considering that if the Orioles don't do this, then bye-bye season. The season's not over with just yet.
No, not at all. But I just want to take that back.
You don't want to take it back, though, because it was a what-if scenario.
I want to imply good vibes here right now.
You want to pick up good vibrations?
Are we doing a Beach Boys thing right now?
I don't know. Does anybody listening to this podcast hear of the Beach Boys that are not under the age?
I would hope that there are people that listen to our podcast that are aware of who the Beach Boys are. I mean, you don't have to know all their songs.
I mean, does anybody under 20 know who the Beach Boys are?
I doubt it.
Because you see all the kids react to on videos, and you see them like talking about, what is this? I have no idea what this is. Yeah. It's a Game Boy.
Yeah, like when Paul.
The Game Boy.
Oh, yeah, like when Paul McCartney did the video or did the song with Kanye West. Wow, this is going to be great for Paul McCartney's career. What?
What?
No.
No.
The Beatles. Wings. Are you kidding me? Oh, my goodness. Well, we're cutting it
close. I can kind of, you know, give him a pass on Wings, though.
Well, Wings, he had some good songs there.
Yeah, he did. But, I mean, all in all, it was all about Paul McCartney. I mean, the Beatles is what you would think about with Paul McCartney. Wings, yeah, it comes up as like a side story, but that's almost like Cousin Oliver right there.
Well, we're cutting it close to the May giveaway, because the tickets we're giving away the last day of May, Sunday, May 31st. It will be a 1:35, a Sunday game there, Ray. For anybody that's listening to this podcast, for anybody that is looking to win free tickets to do an upcoming Orioles game, this is it right here. Now, last time we gave away four tickets to our winner, Angel of Dundalk. Now, unfortunately, Angel, you will have to wait 60 more days until you can qualify for our next event. Yep, there are rules that do apply to our contest here. Now, for everyone else who hasn't won yet, it's fair game. Now, we're giving away not one, Ray, but two pairs of three tickets for this game.
Jeez, good grief, man.
Section 87, row 2, seats 9 through 14. 9, 10, 11 are for one. 12, 13, and 14 are for the other. So, yep, two winners are going to be sitting alongside each other enjoying an Orioles game. They're for absolutely zilch, for free. Now, this is what you have to do. You have to go on our Facebook page.
And interact with us.
Interact with us.
The most amount of interactions that are comments, that's just about anything like that, getting your friends involved, sharing comments, everything of the like, that counts.
Absolutely, it counts. And also be sure to tag your friends, let them know, and who knows, if we see that a couple of your friends ended up liking the page, those are bonus bucks for you. If we see that your friends that you tagged also shared the page and let everybody know about us, even double bonus bucks for you. And heck, if we even mention our Twitter page and you follow us on Twitter and tell everybody else to, well, you're just going to be in the forefront there like American Pharaoh might be at the Preakness. So there you go. So those are your tickets right there. Section 87, row 2, seats 9 through 14, 9, 10, 11 for one, 12, 13, 14 for the other. Two pairs, I should say, of three tickets. So
yeah, and this contest.
What do you think about that, Ray?
Well, yeah, I think it's fantastic. This contest is in no way, shape, or form affiliated with Facebook. It's sponsors or affiliates, Twitter, it's sponsors or affiliates, or any other social media net page that we're on. And you don't necessarily have to like the page to, you know, be qualified for it. Just the most interactions on our page.
Just interact with us.
Interact with us and talk to us and talk about that. Like if we like post something up like news of the day, and you start commenting on it and do everything like that. I mean, don't like keep copying and pasting. It's got to be unique interactions.
Yeah, and you know what else I've noticed too? Whenever we've posted, you know, recent articles on our page, whether it be the Ravens draft, let's see, Melo Trimble coming back for his sophomore year, Ed Reed's retirement, we've gotten some fan interaction. We've gotten some likes. So that is definitely a plus side there. And if we get some fan interaction from you, or I should say use guys.
Shut up, use.
Use guys could win yourself a free pair of three tickets to the upcoming May 31st, Sunday, Baltimore Orioles game against the Tampa Bay Rays, 1:35 first pitch. So just keep listening to the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. And Ray, do you have any parting words?
I would say listen to the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Share with us your experiences with this free-for-all. Tell us what you think about the free-for-all. Even like, you know, just saying, giving us critiques on the show. All of that counts because it's interaction with us on our social media pages. And it counts among Facebook, Twitter, and, well, that's it in terms of that. But, yeah, go with that. We'll have our contest rules also posted that you'll be able to go with. And, you know, good luck.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Number 20, Ed Reed. Has retired.
You would have thought it would have happened. You would have hoped that it would have happened after 2012, so that way him and Ray Lewis would have went into the same class. Heck, you would have hoped it would have happened after 2013, considering he was, traded between the Houston Texans and the New York Jets. But
he did have three interceptions in 2013.
Yeah. He did, but just wasn't the same. Just didn't feel the same.
No, I mean, to tell you the truth, it's better to go out with that bang, and you had the bang right there in that Super Bowl in 2012 win that you had with Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis's last ride, as he said. And if you were to retire then, I would have to say that would be, like, high living. But I guess Ed Reed wanted to collect a little bit more, see what he can do. And then when 2014 came around and no team called his number, it was just to the point where he said, okay, I'm hanging it up, but I'm coming back to the purple and black to do it and retire as a Raven, which is oh so fitting considering the fact that when you think of Ed Reed, you think of the Baltimore Ravens. You don't think about the Houston Texans. You don't think about the New York Jets. You think about purple and black with Ed Reed. He is associated with that. Ray Lewis stayed here his entire career. Cal Ripken stayed with the Orioles his entire career.
John Ogden also stayed here his entire career, too.
Now, Brett Favre, you know, retired as a Packer.
Should have retired as a Packer.
You think of that as a Green Bay Packer. So, I mean, yeah, he would retire as a Packer because that's what we know him as in the yellow and green. We don't know him with the New York Jets. We don't know him with the Minnesota Vikings. We know Brett Favre as a Green Bay Packer. And we know Ed Reed as a Baltimore Raven. We know Johnny Unitas is a Baltimore Colt, not a San Diego Charger. So with that being said, these guys can go on and play for different teams in the twilights of their career, but they'll always be known where they got their start, where they got their rise to fame and their rise to power if they stay with that team for a significant portion of their career like Ed Reed did. And therefore, Ed Reed retiring as a Raven, good call. 64 interceptions this guy had throughout his career. 61 with Baltimore in his 11 years in Baltimore. 12-year career for Ed Reed. Not too shabby for a 24-year-old rookie.
9-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-Pro. Also part of the 2000s All-Decade team right there. So solid. Solid accomplishments there for number 20. And also, since we're kind of going back to players that have played for a team in their entire career, you know, we also noted Troy Polamalu retired earlier this year, playing his entire career with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, he's well on his way to a Hall of Fame bid, former Defensive Player of the Year, just like Ed Reed. So that fateful day in Canton years down the road, you're going to have Ravens fans in attendance and Steelers fans in attendance. That's going to be quite an interesting day there.
Who's going to get elected first? Are they both first balloters?
No. But it's going to be who was better. Who was the better safety? Me and Ray are going to be talking about that because we're going to be looking back on the career of Ed Reed. We're going to be looking back on his positives, his negatives. Don't worry, there were just few negatives there. And also, where does he rank, not just amongst defensive players, but players overall that played in the 2000s era? So, looking at Ed Reed here, you had a guy who came out of the University of Miami in 2002, who was a standout track and field star for the University of Miami, but more so was a national champion, 2-time All-American for the Miami Hurricanes. And Larry Coker there as well for Miami. Coming into the 2002 draft, he was a first-round pick for the Baltimore Ravens, was set to replace Rod Woodson, who, due to salary cap issues, and the Ravens had many salary cap issues in 2002, you had the likes of Leon Searcy, Elvis Gerback, Rod Woodson, Tony Siragusa just eating up the cap and just creating this big hole that the Ravens had to climb up from. And Ed Reed was a part of that climbing out process. Not so much helping them out record-wise, but giving fans a reason to buy a ticket, because you knew that with Ed Reed playing safety and his playmaking abilities, when you bought a ticket and number 20 was lined up in the secondary, you got your money's worth.
That you were, and he was going up against 86 in the Pittsburgh Steelers all day long. And with Ed Reed as well, one of the early, I guess you could say, highlights about Ed Reed that I first saw was the fact that he had a fumble recovery and was running it in for a touchdown, except the hot dog didn't held it out right there, and it got spiked, uppercutted, like at the one-yard line. He lost possession, didn't score a touchdown. So that was my first taste of Ed Reed, but I was like, okay.
That's a negative.
I was like, okay, shake it off there, son. That's the idea that don't judge things based off of a first impression, because when you have a bad first impression like that, you should get the opportunity to make amends anew, and Ed Reed has done that, even though he still made those weird, ridiculous plays on returns with the laterals and the, good dear God, why are you doing that? Just kneel it down. Just take the tackle. Why are you lateraling?
So he was exciting in both good ways and bad ways, is what you were trying to say. More so in good ways. Bad ways, it just seems like even in the latter part of his career, when he was doing those laterals, it was totally unnecessary. I guess because he was just running out of room of space to run. But even so, it was still some quality entertainment that was provided by a defense during a time when the offense was inept for the Baltimore Ravens.
You could hear Ravens fans screaming in unison of, yeah, no, no.
Yep. Whether they were at M&T Bank Stadium or they were watching on their television sets, the Baltimore Ravens fans certainly have had a long more love than hate relationship for number 20, Ed Reed. Now, Ed Reed, you look at his career with the Baltimore Ravens, all the interceptions, all the interception return yards, the 108-yard interception return for a touchdown against the Philadelphia Eagles, which stands to this day as the longest interception return in NFL history. His 9 career postseason interceptions, which is tied for first amongst 2 other players on the all-time list in postseason records. You look at all that. You look at the 9 Pro Bowls, the eight All-Pro selections, the 2000s All-Team selection. In your mind, Ray, looking at defensive players, just defensive players, I guess you can do this top 10, top 5, top 3, however you want to do it. Where do you rank Ed Reed amongst the top defensive players of the 2000s?
Well, he's definitely up there. I'd say Number three.
Number three. Who are your two?
Derek Brooks. And I'm also going to go with Ray Lewis.
So no Michael Strahan, no Warren Sapp.
Brett Favre laid down for that final sack. No.
I don't know. No Simeon Rice either? No, I'm just kidding. But just naming former Tampa Bay Buccaneers. John Lynch, I guess, is a honorable mention right there. I mean, you could say he's probably top 10, top 15.
Oh, yeah, definitely players. John Lynch. That guy would wreck people.
Yeah, and Ed Reed played, you know, alongside a good slew of safeties during his career.
Charles Woodson as well. Charles Woodson. I would put up there.
Yep, Charles Woodson, who, when he's done his tenure with the Oakland Raiders, he'll be well on his way to a Hall of Fame bid, and rightfully so. Also, former Defensive Player of the Year. So, yeah, I do agree with that. I would have picked top three as well. Ray Lewis would be... Actually, you know what? I'm switching it. Just for excitement purposes, Ray, I have Ed Reed 1, Ray Lewis 2, and then third is Michael Strahan. That's my top three for the 2000s.
You like the sexy stats. I picked Ray Lewis just because of the way he could invigorate a defense and the intimidation that he had all throughout the 2000s. But I'm also putting in Derek Brooks because Derek Brooks was really nasty. Especially, you know, with the Buccaneers defense that won the Super Bowl. He led that along with Rondae Barber and Dexter Jackson and John Lynch, as I mentioned, Warren Sapp. Just pick a player on that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense in the early 2000s, and that was pretty much up there with the Ravens defense as well. Now, granted, Derek Brooks did not have, like, the star power that Ray Lewis had, and that's also being factored into the equation. Remember, purple and black glasses are off here, Josh. Remember, I'm not the one wearing purple Beats headphones right now.
No.
So I'm looking at it with rose-colored glasses, but I have to give credit where credit is due, and Ray Lewis was an intimidating factor for defenses all across the league, and then I put Derek Brooks up there, and Ed Reed is a solid third just because of the way that the man was able to just change the course of a game and the ability to hog the middle of the field. He controlled it. That's the way Ed Reed was.
And you look at Ed Reed and players that he influenced. I guess one name you could bring up, even though it's in memoriam, is Sean Taylor, who was a former Miami safety there. And also went to a couple Pro Bowls himself with the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, and even jacked up a punter in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, and we will never see that again. But he looked to Ed Reed as sort of that benchmark for safeties. And I also looked at that in 2007. I think it was the Sunday night game against the New England Patriots where Ray Lewis and Ed Reed got together and wanted to play for Sean Taylor. I guess it was just a form. It was a unity of Miami Hurricanes just getting together and playing solid defense for, you know, a fallen brother in arms. But, you know, Ed Reed, just the way he played in the secondary, and in an NFL that is offense-driven now, it is so sorely missed, that type of secondary play. And the closest we can come to any exciting defensive play is Houston Texans defensive end J.J. Watt. Other than that, it's just slim pickings out there. But Ed Reed was one of the handful of guys you could count on excitement-wise for the league. Now, overall, Ray, let's just say overall, you could say top 25, top 15, top 10. This includes offense. You can include a kicker or two if you want.
Where? Martin Gramatica?
No, stop.
Adam Vinatieri?
Stop. Adam Vinatieri, okay, you could probably make a case for him as a top 25 guy, but where do you rank Ed Reed in the 2000s era, all positions?
Well, in terms of, you know, top 15?
Impact, playing style.
I can probably, let's see if we can think of 15 players that I would rank ahead of Ed Reed in terms of, you know, their playing style. And what were the other ones you said?
Tony Gonzalez. You probably put Tony Gonzalez up there.
I would put Tony Gonzalez up there.
John Ogden. John Ogden, Walter Jones, I guess those are tackles, right?
So yeah, Randy Moss.
You could probably make a case for them top 50, but I don't know about top 25. That would be...
Randy Moss.
Moss has had some off years, though. I mean, he does have Hall of Fame numbers, but...
Larry Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald. Didn't win a Super Bowl, but okay.
I mean, I'll go with Derek Brooks.
Yeah, Derek Brooks. Peyton Manning, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Those are givens right there. Running backs. LaDainian Tomlinson, you'd have to put up there too.
Yeah, you can't remember LaDainian Tomlinson. Larry Johnson for a certain extent.
Larry Johnson, yeah.
Let me see, in terms of running backs. Warwick Dunn.
Warwick Dunn.
I wouldn't put him above Ed Reed.
No. But let's say top 25.
Though. Marshall Faulk, though.
All right, well, let's say top 25. Is Ed Reed in your top 25?
I'll go with yes.
Is he in your top 20? No, pun intended. Is he in your top 20?
Okay, guess what? He's number 20. I'll be cute.
Okay, so he'll be number 20. I'll have him in my top 20 as well. Top 15, I guess, just with the players that have came through in the NFL over the past several years, defensively, offensively, even a special teams player, it is tough to say where Ed Reed would land, but I guess you could say, yeah, he was a top 20 guy during the 2000s era, and given his accomplishments on the field, off the field, given the Pro Bowls, given the Defensive Player of the Year award, given the Super Bowl trophy to end his Baltimore tenure, it is safe to say that Ed Reed had quite a remarkable career, and years down the road, we hope to see him have a more than memorable speech in Canton, Ohio.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Just when you thought the Deflategate scandal was over, still is not, and probably will not be, we'll be talking about this all the way up till at least Game 5 of the regular season in 2015.
If you were just listening to our podcast just now, you probably have found out the day before or hours beforehand that New England Patriots star quarterback and multiple-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady.
All you got to do is say Tom Brady and people know who he is.
Well, yeah, I know. But you do have to bring up the fact that he's won Super Bowls. He's the poster boy. Wink, wink, of the NFL, unless he thinks that.
And now he's tied to two different cheating scandals.
Yep. Tom Brady is going to be facing a 4-game suspension for his role in the Deflategate issue that went on this past postseason, which included a good amount of footballs that were underinflated by equipment personnel at the AFC Championship game against the Indianapolis Colts. Now, Tom Brady has adamantly denied that he had anything to do with decreasing the air in the footballs he plays with. As a matter of fact, he has went on record. He even went to a local university in Massachusetts, I believe. And even before the ruling was dealt out, he of course, I guess because he felt comfortable being in the state that he plays in, he was just catering to the crowd there. Well, do you think I did it, huh? No? Oh, well, neither did I, you know, so. And now you see a guy who, he's played this image of the goody-two-shoes, you know, quarterback that can do no wrong in the league. He's noble. He passes this image along. And now you do have to tie him to multiple cheating scandals. First, there was Spygate from the earlier 2000s, which the St. Louis Rams claimed that there was video footage that was recorded of them in their game plan.
That was destroyed by Roger Goodell.
Yes.
What was up with that? I mean, yeah. Can you seriously? You've considerably lost everybody pretty much after that scandal took place, and you burned the tapes.
And also, that came out after the 2007 season where the Patriots were having a perfect season up until their Super Bowl loss to the New York Giants that year.
18-1. The Giants are the one in 18-1. Tom Coughlin is the one behind the one in 18-1.
Yeah, so had to throw that little lingo in there. And you know, Tom Brady, of course, was the same quarterback who, after John Harbaugh debated that there was an illegal shift play that was used in the AFC divisional round game against the Patriots this past postseason, Tom Brady, quote, said to John Harbaugh to the press, you know, you should read the rule book. How ironic is it that a guy who goes and says you should read the rule book is now facing a 4-game suspension, is going to lose a good amount of dollars, game dollars. And, oh, yeah, his team lost a first-round pick in 2016 and a fourth-round pick in 2017. A pretty hefty fine there by the commish of the National Football League. Of course, I think this should have been handled sooner rather than now. But looking at it now, though, Ray, I think that I use this analogy in all aspects of life. if you put your hand in the cookie jar way too many times, eventually you're going to get smacked. And the Patriots and Tom Brady both got smacked hard.
That they did. And where there's smoke, there is fire. You want to say it ain't so, Tom. Say it ain't
We're
so.
We're past that point.
You are pretty much past that point. A lot of people are like saying that Roger Goodell and the NFL are just like going after Brady and everything like that. But this is your team that just won the Super Bowl. You're putting a black eye on your entire league by vehemently going after these, you know, the New England Patriots by saying, "Oh yeah, they used a deflated Super Bowl. They used deflated footballs," and now you gotta look at it the way from the NFL's perspective, who wants to say, hey, we're clamping down on this, we're clamping down on this, and the other side saying, well, the report only benefits those who purchased the report, and that's the NFL. I'm thinking, though, how does a deflated ball scandal for the New England Patriots, a team that just won the Super Bowl, benefit the NFL? It doesn't really benefit it at all, to tell you the truth. You get the 24-hour news cycle that even though we're well into the NFL's offseason, we just had the draft that you would be able to talk about being newsworthy, but since that's been over, nothing really to talk about, they decided to create some news with this Patriots Deflategate scandal and Tom Brady being suspended for 4 games, which, by the way, the game that he comes back on is against the Indianapolis Colts in Indy on Sunday Night Football.
And you call that a fix.
That was on purpose.
That is fixed, damn it. But you could say that Roger Goodell could have pulled a Kennesaw Mountain Landis like he did with the Chicago White Sox back in the years prior and banned Brady. Well, not ban him, but you could have done something to the fuller extent of, say, I don't know, forfeiting the Super Bowl title to the Seattle Seahawks. But then again, considering that Pete Carroll ran one of the worst plays in Super Bowl history that cost his team the game there, I guess you really don't deserve to get the Super Bowl given back to you.
And has it ever happened in professional sports? I mean, everyone talks about, oh, they should vacate the Super Bowl and give it to the other team.
It's been discussed many times, though.
It's been discussed many times, but it's never really happened. Yeah. And if anything, if there's something that gets vacated in college sports, if something gets vacated, it's just vacant that year. The title is just vacant. They don't give it to anybody.
Oh, you look at the Montreal Expos back in the 1994 strike-shortened season, where they had the overall best record in Major League Baseball. At the time, they had, Larry Walker, Pedro Martinez on that roster, and you had some outlets saying, well, because it was a strike-shortened year, Montreal should have a World Series title up in their city. And that wasn't the case, because strike-shortened seasons, you have to have a postseason, and they didn't necessarily have that. Now, given the fact of the postseasons and everything, this doesn't take away the fact that Tom Brady has all these accomplishments. He has MVP awards. He has Super Bowl trophies. But it's pretty damning that you have all of that, and yet you feel the need to, to alleviate the game in your favor, to cheat, to go out of your way to cheat in your favor. And you still are going to have people backing you up. You're still going to have Patriots fans backing you up. As a matter of fact, Ray, you and I have a mutual friend who I'm sure, whether he's watching the Four Letter Network right now or just reading his newspaper tomorrow or even listening to this podcast, I'm sure he's down somewhere in his local New Jersey court just yelling and screaming, asking for Tom Brady's name to be vilified and redeemed. And I think here's a little tidbit of what he may be saying right now.
You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
You're out of order, Ray.
I'm not out of order.
This whole thing is out of order.
The whole damn system's out of order. Forget it, Josh. It's Chinatown.
Oh, man. But, all right, what is your personal view on Tom Brady right now as it stands? This isn't necessarily an off-the-field indiscretion where, let's say, Ben Roethlisberger was accused once again of sexual assault, even though wasn't taken to court for it. This is something that is document-proven, pretty much.
And is talked about during actual play in the game and everything like that. I'm not putting him up there with his former teammate, Aaron Hernandez.
Not to that extent.
Okay, Hernandez as
Let's take that. Let's slow it down. Let's take it back to square one here, Ray, and start back up again.
No, I mean, when it comes to actual, like, a deflated ball scandal, I just don't think that the stats match up that this gave them such a significant advantage to the point, as you said, in that Super Bowl. Pete Carroll lost that Super Bowl with not giving that ball to Marshawn Lynch.
But here was my question. Even if it didn't make a difference, why do it anyway?
That's yeah, just why do it anyway? That's just that's the thing that I would ask is why do it anyway?
And if you did do, and if this wasn't the first time that you did it, well, what other games did you have this happen in? You know, that's another big question, and I think that is something that may be going into big detail.
I think that the Patriots in the NFL and the Shield will endure like they always endure. If the Ray Rice scandal and them allegedly covering it up didn't bring them down, apparently nothing will as of right now until people become disinterested in the NFL in general. And it doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon, even though there are people in my inner circle who are just becoming disgusted with the NFL and just tired of it being thrown in their faces all the time.
And by the way, you bring up Ray Rice. Isn't it pretty weird that Greg Hardy, who, when you read the reports, his acts seemed more malicious than Ray Rice's, yet Greg Hardy is signed to a deal to Dallas and Ray Rice has no deal yet?
Maybe. Not yet. That's the key. To keep the media cycle going, this New England Patriots story will fizzle out over the next couple of months until right before training camp. And right before training camp comes to pass, a team signs Ray Rice.
All right. Now, let's look at it this way. Ray Rice seems to have been the sacrificial lamb for domestic disputes, off-the-field indiscretions in terms of the police blotter. And he's paying for it at the moment. Considering the fact that Tom Brady is going to be losing 4 paychecks in 4 games.
Big deal.
Big deal. I know, big deal. But would you say he could be the sacrificial lamb for star players that, okay, if it can happen to him, it can happen to every single one of you?
Well, not really, considering the fact that at the end of the day, I said the Patriots will endure, Tom Brady will endure, his legacy will endure. There'll be people that'll talk about it, but that'll just be the ones that are constantly vocal about it, to the point where it's your Uncle Ronnie. You just want your Uncle Ronnie to shut up, and you just say at Thanksgiving dinner, okay, Uncle Ronnie, sure, yeah, I get you. Okay, fine, yeah, okay, by the way, okay, nobody cares.
But can you look at him in an honorable light?
That I don't know. Considering the fact that he left a woman who was pregnant.
Well, they rekindled it later on. I mean, even
there,
though...
There's that, yeah. A bunch of other things that Tom Brady has... done throughout his career with the spy gate and the deflate gate and everything else that's going on. I'm just not love struck over the guy. I never have been. I never really have been obsessed with Tom Brady to the point where I'm just like, oh, it's Brady. Yay, go Brady. It's the Brady Bunch. And Tuck Rule. It's a Tuck Rule. No, I'm not all about Tom Brady. I've never really been obsessed with Brady. As a matter of fact, with the way that, you know, he's constantly gesturing and everything like that, I'm indifferent towards this whole ball gate scandal. I think there are more important things
just
to worry about.
It's a flake gate, Ray. But let's get rid of the gate. Let's get rid of the gate on it.
Oh, so if there was a scandal involving a fence, would it be called gate gate?
Fence gate.
Gate gate.
Gate gate.
Or fence gate, yeah.
All right, so you're indifferent to Tom Brady and his honor in terms of the sport of football. I think it's altered to a sense where... you can hold him in high regard as a great player, but as a great person, a great teammate, just somebody that you want your kids to look up to, I think that's...
I don't want my kids to look up to any athlete.
Not any athlete, but I mean, if your kid's playing quarterback and they want to be like Tom Brady, you certainly don't want them to inflate a football and use it to their advantage. You don't want that going around because... then you're just being a bad role model yourself by encouraging this. So, yeah, I mean, Tom Brady, sure, he's a great player. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. He's got 4 Super Bowl rings. But in my personal and humble opinion, I think honor conquers all.
Maybe so, but we've been talking about asterisks and cheating and everything else that's been going on to gain an advantage for the last 15 years with baseball. I want to talk about something else.
What's that?
Two-minute rants.
Two-minute rants? Oh, boy. DC sports fans, Capital sports fans, I've had enough, okay? I've had enough of stellar teams like the Washington Capitals who possess multiple-time Hart Trophy winners like Alexander Ovechkin go into the Eastern Conference playoffs and come up short. What am I referring to? I don't know. How about a 3-1 lead over the New York Rangers, a team that is in the first seed last time I checked in the Eastern Conference playoffs? And you bring up the games that they had. Okay, first game, they lose 4-1 to the Islanders. That game went to 7. It should have ended after 5, in my opinion. The Islanders, in my opinion, don't even rank up there with the Capitals. Now, looking at the New York Rangers, yeah, they are a better team. Henrik Lundqvist is one of the best goalies in all the league right now. And given the fact that Kuznetsov is playing lights out for the Capitals, where's Alexander Ovechkin? Oh, yeah, that's right. He's behind Kuznetsov in goals. Only 4 goals. The playoffs are where your star players need to emerge. Where your Rick Nashes, your Sidney Crosbys have 8 to 9 goals by now. Alexander Ovechkin, he's nowhere to be seen. I think Jason Chimera and Joel Ward have put up more offense and more defense than Alexander Ovechkin has at this point. Here's where I'm getting at, and you're probably going to hate me for this if you're a Capitals fan. If the Capitals should lose Wednesday, May the 13th in Game 7 at New York against the Rangers, I think it is time to cut the cord. I think it is time to get a divorce. I think it is time to trade Alex Ovechkin. Because let's face it, if you had a guy that good on your team all those years and you couldn't get anywhere, what other turn do you have left?
Wow. I mean, in terms of, you know, what they've done in the playoffs, I have to say Henrik Lundqvist was a big factor in Game 6 because the Capitals, they put like 40 shots on goal.
And Braden Holtby, has been good too, you know, to his extent.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll see what happens in Game 7 on Wednesday.
Yeah, you hope that
Maybe they get over that hump and decide to finally get into the Eastern Conference Finals. Okay, but the Baltimore Orioles fans have kind of grown a little bit toxic over the last couple of years. I mean, yeah, it's always been kind of rough because we all had to endure the 14-year losing streak that the Orioles had ad nauseum up until 2012 and Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette and the era that was all these other players that Andy McPhail brought in and everything that just seemed to click from 2012 and beyond. Not so much this year, but in those years of 2012, 2013, and 2014, there were fans out there who says, they didn't do anything in the offseason. They're going to be bad this year. They're going to be terrible. They're going to be this and that. And here's the thing. The Orioles have had a winning record in the last 3 years that you've said that. So I think that your argument is a little invalid right there. Now, in terms of this year, it says, see, I told you that they didn't make any moves in the offseason, and they got rid of Nelson Cruz. They got rid of Nick Markakis. I'll give you Andrew Miller, but here's the thing. You are doing what is known as an Indian rain dance in terms of your arguments. Why do I say it's an Indian rain dance? Because, well, the Indian rain dance only worked because they kept doing it. That's the thing about that rain dance, and that's the rain dance argument that you're doing. You keep doing that argument until it sticks, until it works, and then you put a little bit of an emphasis. You don't say anything while they're winning, or you get, oh yeah, go team, yay, go Orioles. And then when the negative starts up, you say, oh, Adam Jones, he's a bum. He's always swinging at that outside slider and everything like that, even though he was the best two-strike hitter in baseball a couple years ago when he was swinging at that slider. And then you have everybody else saying, hey, well, same old Orioles. What are the same old Orioles? Are you talking about that 14-year losing streak? Because for me, I mean, it's not that distant of a memory. But at the same time, in terms of 3 straight winning seasons, I think it's safe to say that in terms of the same old Orioles, it just doesn't seem to stick anymore.
I think we need to go through another cleansing period of fans for the Baltimore Orioles because we're starting to see who the real fans and the fake fans are.
I'll tell you what, you're getting a lot of football fans bleeding in right there because they think that one game is in baseball weighs as much as one game in the NFL.
It's not just Oriole fans. I think it's a majority of fans in all the sports. I mean, every team is guilty of it. Heck, even look at the Dallas Cowboys every single year. Of course, they call them America's team, and I'm sure every state that you go to have a fan that wears a Dallas Cowboys hat, and they probably can't name more than 2 or 3 players on the team. And yet, when a team falters, they're like, oh, stupid Cowboys, I knew they wouldn't make it. You know.
That they would, but this has been another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Don't forget, our contest is starting up. The most interactions you have on Facebook in terms of comments, shares, and just page interaction will get counted towards your stats. We'll keep count. The counts are fair. Do not worry about that. And we are in no way associated with Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. This contest is a separate entity that we of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All are doing. SFMSports.net is not even doing this, so not affiliated with that in terms of their contest. everybody, have fun. Enjoy the game. Enjoy Baltimore sports in general. Enjoy this time. Maybe the Cavs get over the hump in Game 7. We shall see, though, Josh.
Yep, we shall see. And this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Josh Hall.
And I am Ray Atkinson.
And we will see you all.
Hey, that's my line. The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.